Okay, so good morning slash afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Coach the Coach Practicum 2. This is Class 3 on Turnarounds, and it is Monday, January 18th. I'm Jackie Gartman, and I'm super excited to be with you. It feels like it's been forever since our last class, so I'm really looking forward to checking in with all of you and having a little coffee talk and see how things are going, if you have any questions. Before we jump into the art of turnarounds, which is one of my favorite classes, mostly because you get to participate. So, and I just think turnarounds are super fun, like a puzzle to me sometimes. So, let's just start off by kind of going around the room, and I'd love to hear how your experiences in practicing the work, or if you have any questions about the tool. And it looks like someone just joined us, so make sure you let me know if you're here so I don't mark you absent.
Adrienne Hillman, can you hear me?
Adrienne. Okay, yeah. Welcome, Adrienne.
Hi.
Hey, I'm glad you could join us. We just started. So I'm just wondering if there are any questions or if anyone wants to share how their coaching practice is going with the work. Is it all going flawlessly? Everyone's like, no. Not at all. It feels weird and awkward. As it should. All right. No questions?
Jackie, this is Lisa.
Yeah, Lisa.
I have a question about coaching a client week after week with the same limiting belief. At what point is it no longer helping and it's just story fondling?
So is the question, at what point is what no longer helping? Doing the work on the thought?
Yes, when it seems to bring the same responses,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to be moving forward.
Right. So... with this, so are you thinking of someone in particular, or is this more of a theoretical question?
It's something that's been happening, yeah, in a real situation.
Okay. All right. So have you been working the same thought, using the same tool week after week with this person?
Yes.
And noticing that there hasn't been much progress?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't usually, if I work a thought with somebody or a belief with a client, I don't keep using the work on that same belief if it continues to pop up. And it usually will, by the way. So sometimes, I just want to clear that up. Sometimes there's this misconception or an expectation that once you do the work on a particular belief, that belief is going to be eradicated. And that's just not true, because you need to remember that people have been living with their belief systems for quite a few years, and kind of reinforcing those belief systems is kind of like a well-grooved path to your front door. That's the same thing that happens in your brain. That neural pathway continues to get reinforced as you continue to believe a thought and find evidence for that thought. So just that, I just wanted to say that up front, because I know that sometimes newer coaches have that expectation, like, well, I worked that thought last week. Why is it popping to get up again? So I will not use the same tool over and over and over again. I don't find it effective, and I find that sometimes it can be frustrating to the client as well. So the first thing you want to remember is when you've done the work. So, Lisa, when you did the work with this person on this particular belief, did other beliefs pop up? Usually they do. Did you notice?
Yes. Other beliefs did come up. She wasn't that interested in pursuing them.
Okay. So that's number one. Number one is usually when you're doing the work on a belief, other beliefs will pop up, especially in question three, how do you react, what happens when you believe that thought. So you want to make sure that you address all of those thoughts, even though they may not seem as potent or as powerful. Okay, and I'm hearing some noise in the background, so if you're shuffling papers or moving around, if you can mute yourself, that would be great. So that's number one. You want to make sure you don't keep recycling the same thought over and over and over again, and maybe address some of those other thoughts that pop out of doing the original work with that first belief. Having said that, you do want to meet a client where they're at, right? So if a client's like, I don't want to work that belief, you may want to poke around a little bit in there and ask some whys around that. Is there a reason why that your client doesn't want to look at that belief more closely? Maybe it just doesn't have a lot of juice there. I mean, there could be some truth in that. Or maybe it feels a little too tender, in which case you don't want to give up on it. So there are other ways that you can dissolve a thought, and one of them is using the ACT tools, which is what we're going to be addressing next week. And usually the ACT tools I use after I do the work. So I'm going to ask you maybe that you hold off a little, you know, a week, but you can certainly do some reading about the ACT tools in advance if you'd like to. But that's another wonderful tool to use with people after you've done the work, after you've done the deeper work with them, as a way for them to kind of step out of themselves and be the observer in their life and notice what they're telling themselves. It seems to kind of diffuse the power of the feelings that are associated with those beliefs and diffuse the story, if you will. Lisa, does that help at all?
It really helps, yes. Thank you.
Okay, good. Yeah, and if it doesn't, I want to hear that too, because...
I'd tell you.
Okay, good. Okay. All right, any other questions about the work or how things have been going or framing up thoughts? All right. Okay. Well, if you think of something, let me know. I'll hold some space at the end of the class if you want to ask some questions. So let's move forward and let's start talking about turnarounds. I know you all have been excited to get to this piece, and we haven't really been practicing this in the first two classes because, again, there is an art to turnarounds, and it's a whole topic unto itself, which is why we've devoted an entire class to it. So today we're going to actually, and I had some of you posted your not limiting beliefs, not all of you, but there's enough for all of us to play with during class today. So I want to kind of go over some of the concept of turnarounds and what you want to keep in mind when you're turning thoughts around to the opposite concept. So just a few things I want to review. First and foremost, you want to make sure that before you take a painful belief or thought through inquiry or what we call the work, that you're working with a single, succinct, and declarative thought. So sometimes people will say, you know, I worked this thought, and it just, I don't know, something didn't work, something was off, it felt really cumbersome. And if something feels off or just there's no connection to it from the client's perspective or you're feeling like there's something not right, you're probably correct. So you want to make sure that when you're working with a thought, that it truly is a belief. So let me just give you a couple examples of a thought that if you took to inquiry could be difficult to make any progress with because it's actually not a thought. So I'm going to put you on the spot, Lisa, here a little bit, but this is why we're here. We're here to learn. So Lisa, you had posted the thought, my house is full of clutter that overwhelms me. So I want you all to think about that basic coaching frame or the framework for coaching. Sorry, we changed the name. It used to be called basic coaching framework. That framework for coaching. We've gone over that in the last couple of classes. Remember, a framework for coaching is circumstances drive thoughts, or these thoughts trigger our feelings, and our feelings trigger our actions. So I always have this in the forefront of my mind because it actually helps me when I'm thought catching and when I'm framing up a thought to work with a client. So in this case, when you hear this phrase, my house is full of clutter that overwhelms me, what do you guys think about that? Relevant to the framework for coaching.
Jackie, this is Hope. Can I step in?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you could work with it by asking, is it true? Is it absolutely true? But it seems that embedded in there is a should that could be worked on, which is that my house should be cleaner, or I should be a better housekeeper, probably beneath that. So I think maybe try to dig down and see what's beneath that, and that might get you to a more authentic personal issue that you can turn around.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. So, yes, and that was actually much more of a depthful answer than I was looking for, but you are correct. So first and foremost, when you see that phrase, my house is full of clutter and it overwhelms me, that to me is both a circumstance and a feeling. And this is important to know because it's going to help inform you of how you're going to coach this person to find, as Hope said, maybe the underlying deeper belief. And there could be, you know, a should in there, like I should be a better housekeeper, or I should be more organized, or if I was more organized, I would feel better, right? So there probably is an underlying belief in there. But first and foremost, you should be able to know when you're listening to this information from a client how you're going to identify and categorize it. Because if it's a thought, you might just take it to inquiry, right? And a lot of you posted just some really painful thoughts, which really don't need massaging. But in this case, it does. There needs to be a little bit more work there. So when I hear something like this, my house is full of clutter, I want to say, what are you making that mean? To find out, to mine for and excavate the more painful thought. Why is that so uncomfortable for you? Or what's upsetting to you about that? Or what's so bad about it? Those questions will help to kind of shine a light on the deeper underlying thought, as Hope suggested. Does that make sense, you guys?
Yes.
Yeah. Because we don't, and we also don't want to take a thought to inquiry that includes a feeling in there, because it's important that your client, you too, obviously, and your client understands that it's not the clutter that's overwhelming them, it's the thought about the clutter. It's usually the clutter in the mind that causes those feelings. Does that make sense? Okay.
Brilliant.
So, yeah. So there was also another example. I'm going to use Lizelle's example. Well, actually, before we move on, Lisa, so while we're talking about your belief, so what do you make it mean that your house is full of clutter?
I make it mean that there's so many papers that I can't organize my papers. I should be able to organize my papers better.
Okay. So that's the thought.
Yeah.
I should be able to be more organized?
Yeah.
Okay. And the situation is with her papers. So when you're bringing that thought to inquiry, you're going to want to set it up so she can access her feelings and her behaviors in response to that thought that gets popped up when she thinks about all the papers in her house. If that makes sense. Okay? So I just wrote down, I should be able to be more organized. And there may be some other thoughts in there too. Right, Lisa?
Oh, I'm sure.
But that's, yeah, that's the thought that popped up. Okay. So another example is Lizelle's example, I always regain the weight. So thinking about that framework, a framework for coaching, how would you categorize that phrase? Circumstance, thought, feeling, action? Remember, circumstance is a fact. Anybody want to take a guess? Be willing to be wrong or right? What do you guys think?
This is Lisa. I think it might be a circumstance if it is factual. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That could be a circumstance. That could be factual. It could be true that Lizelle has been on, 20 diets. Now I'm getting feedback on myself. Okay, maybe that's better. All right, sorry, you guys. I don't know if you heard that. But it may be that Lizelle's been on several diets and has regained the weight, in which case that becomes a fact, a circumstance. So what do you want to ask? To get to the deeper thought.
What do you make that mean?
Yeah, what do you make that mean? Yeah. That will get to the underlying deeper thought. And it could be something as simple as, I shouldn't regain the weight, or I'll never keep the weight off, or my life is doomed. I mean, that's what you want to look for. So you wouldn't want to take, I'll always regain the weight, because that is a fact. And I'm going to assume that that's a fact. That's a fact. Even if it may not always be the case, just to get underneath it. Okay? So that's a little kind of summary on making sure that you're working with a single succinct and declarative thought, and making sure, at least in your mind, that you're working a thought and not a circumstance, or not a circumstance that's also married to the feeling, because you want to point out to your client that our circumstances do not create our feeling states. Our feeling states create our circumstance. And that's important for them to know, because that's really the cornerstone of being a Martha Beck coach. Okay? You want to make sure you're working, in summary, with a quality thought. You also want to make sure you're working one thought at a time. So, for example, I am further behind than everyone else in class. No one has that thought, I'm sure. Yeah. And I'm failing at this. Those are two thoughts that are married together. So you would separate them out. I'm further behind than everyone else, or I'm failing at this. Second, you also want to make sure that you eliminate any feelings from the painful belief you take to inquiry. So, for example, I'm annoyed with my husband for always telling me what to do. How could you make that more succinct? How could you keep the feeling out of that phrase? How can you relanguage that? I'm annoyed when my husband for is telling me what to do. Any ideas?
Could you just say, this is Adrienne. Could you just say, my husband's always telling me what to do?
Yep, beautiful. Perfect. Exactly. Don't be afraid to rephrase that for your client, because when you take that thought to inquiry, or that belief to inquiry, you're going to find out what that client feels like when they believe that thought, and annoyance will be a part of that. So how do you treat your husband when you believe that thought? Well, I get really annoyed with him. I'm sorry, was there something else, Adrienne?
Yeah, do you tell your client that you're taking the feeling off? Like, do you say, okay, I'm going to rephrase that for you, or do you just say, okay, so your husband's always telling you what to do?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't tell them. I don't need to tell them every little thing that I'm doing along the way. It's not always relevant. So not necessarily. Unless, of course, they are interested in, you know, doing the work on their own and they show some interest in doing it on their own. But usually I don't want them to get too caught up in how I'm doing what I'm doing or why I'm doing what I'm doing. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. Yeah. And if the client says, well, why'd you remove that? Just say, we'll explore that. But that's never happened to me.
Yeah. I forget people aren't doing the work with us. They don't realize.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. All right, so that is number two. The third thing I want to mention is that there's sometimes this misconception that there are always three turnarounds, and that is not the case. There can be up to three turnarounds, and there can be more. But what I want to say is that we look in three places, okay? And those places are look to the opposite, look to the self, and look to the other. But again, that might not always be applicable. For example, with Hope's belief, I'm not smart enough, that belief is focused on the self. So how many turnarounds do you think there might be here? It's already focused on the self, and there is no other. Hint, hint. It's the opposite.
So I think
there's
just one, right? Although you could say other, I'm not as smart as other people, or other people are not as smart as me. You could play with that, I guess, but that would be changing the thought, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if the thought included I'm not as smart as other people, then there would be an other, for sure. But this is just directed at the self. I'm not smart enough. There is no other in there. So technically, there's just one turnaround, which is I am smart enough. Okay? When there's somebody else involved in the limiting belief, then you want to look to the self and to the other. So that's a big clue that when it's already directed at the self, usually there's only one turnaround. And, you know, of course you can play with, you know, antonyms and stuff like, you know, I'm not dumb enough. That's called an extreme turnaround. Usually I don't get too much into teaching that because I don't want you guys to get too caught up in the more turnarounds, the better, because that's not true. Sometimes one turnaround can be really, really powerful, and finding examples of that. So in summary, remember, they're not always three turnarounds. There are three places to look, but you do want to find three examples for each turnaround, because Byron Katie says that third example is what builds that new neural pathway in the brain. So three examples is really important. And the big thing I want you guys to remember is, remember that turnarounds are not to be taken as truth. They're an invitation and a way to try out new thoughts, kind of like trying on clothes, and to really open up the mind. They're windows to other possible interpretations. So if a turnaround statement says, I should have or I shouldn't have, it isn't telling you to take responsibility for someone else's actions. It's really there to jolt the mind. And sometimes the turnaround can carry an insight, a self-realization, or self-discovery. And that's what you want to get at. But most importantly, I want you guys to have fun with this. I love the turnaround portion of the work because it really allows me to play. And so I encourage you all to just play with these and not get too caught up in, you know, having to do it right. But also keep in mind kind of those rules, if you will, for turnarounds to make it easier on yourself. The other last thing that I wanted to mention, which I forgot, is you want to play with the original language. So be careful not to add your own language. I see a lot of people who go through the review and they'll have a thought like, my husband should be more generous with money. And then they turn around to something completely different with completely different language, like, you know, my husband's really a great guy, and I should be figuring out how to be more abundant with myself. So you want to make sure that you use the original language from the painful belief that you're working with, and not to change that up. That's called, if you find a whole new thought that may feel better, and your clients may do that, by the way, so you're going to have to model this for them, because they might find like this whole new thought like that has nothing to do with the original language, and it might feel really good to them. That's okay, but know that you're not doing the work. Know that that's not a true turnaround, and that's actually what we call downstream thinking. Finding a thought that maybe feels just a little better or a little bit truer, but it's not technically a turnaround. All right, any questions or comments about what I just went over? Okay, so have you guys been practicing turnarounds? Has anything come up for you as you've been kind of out there in the world practicing with one another that I should know about or that you need help with before we jump in? Okay. Oh, I do want to mention things. This is a big thing. Turnarounds to the other. This is where most people kind of get caught up in some confusion. So let me give you some tips for helping you turn thoughts around to the other. So I always like to work with examples. So here's an example of a thought. Josh shouldn't be so mean to his brother. So the idea when you're using finding a turnaround to the other is you want to flip the people. So with the original thought, Josh shouldn't be mean to his brother, if you flip the people, it becomes his brother shouldn't be so mean to Josh. Okay? Now, I do want to reinforce that when you're looking for turnarounds, the real goal is to find the projection so that the client can own the behavior. So even though that may resonate for the client, his brother, you know, Josh shouldn't be so mean to his brother, you know, flipping the people, the brother shouldn't be so mean to Josh, it could be also, that could be a painful thought, another painful thought. To, let's say this is a mother who's exploring this, to the mother. So a way to have this mother maybe take responsibility for her projection or own the behavior, because that's where the power comes in, right, is I shouldn't be mean to Josh. I shouldn't be mean to Josh. Now, the other rule of thumb is switch the object and the subject. So let's say the thought is, work with a new one. Let's say the thought is my boss shouldn't yell at me. So if you change the object and the subject, how would that read? Anyone want to take a stab at that? My boss shouldn't yell at me. What would that become if you switch the subject and the object? So the subject is what? The boss?
And my boss should yell at me.
That's the opposite.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So that's for sure a turnaround. It's just the opposite. We're working with the other. Anybody else want to take a stab or you want to try that again?
I should yell at my boss.
Yeah, exactly. So my boss shouldn't yell at me, right? Me mm-hmm. is the object. Put me where the boss is, which is the subject, and put the subject, the boss, where me is. I shouldn't yell at my boss. Yeah. And it may be that she might, you know, this person might say, well, I don't yell at my boss, but maybe they yell at their boss in their mind. Yeah. Yeah. Who hasn't done that? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Let them yell at anyone. Right? So that's where, that, see how that, when you flip the subject and the object, even though you don't make it a literal translation, you can help the client find that projection and really own that behavior.
Okay.
Any questions about turning thoughts to the other? Okay. So let's go through some of these. And then we'll have a couple of you coach. So we'll start with hope. We already did I'm Not Smart Enough. So I'm going to read Hope's limiting thoughts, but Hope, you're not going to turn those thoughts around because they're yours. And we're just going to kind of go down the roster so everyone has a chance to play with these turnarounds. But we will get to you. So we'll start with Hope's second thought. My daughter should be more grateful. So let's start with Dee Dee.
Okay.
What would be the opposite?
My daughter should not be more grateful.
Correct. Awesome. Okay. Aida, how could you turn that thought to the self?
I should be more grateful for my daughters.
That would be to the other.
Okay.
But good job with the other. And if you don't know, that's okay.
I don't think I know.
Okay. Anyone have an idea?
I should be more grateful.
Yeah, I should be more grateful. Now, you could say I should be more grateful to myself or for myself. So remember, when it's turned to self, it's just toward yourself. I should be more grateful. Or I could be more grateful. Okay, and then have them explore where they might be more grateful. Okay. All right. I need to minimize a conflict in our family. Katrina, the opposite.
It would be I don't need to minimize more conflict in my family.
Beautiful. Perfect. Okay. And Rachel. The thought is I need to minimize conflict in our family. If you guys can write this down as we go along, then I don't have to repeat it.
So the thought is I should minimize conflict with my family.
The thought is
right?
I need to minimize conflict in our family. So what would
okay.
How would you
and that? You want me to switch it to the other?
To the self.
Oh, to the self.
Yeah.
I need to minimize conflict with myself.
Yep, beautiful. Absolutely. Nice. Okay. Lizelle, to the opposite.
We did the opposite, right? The other?
We did not. Nope, we did. I mean, I'm sorry, the other. You're right.
It's the other.
For both of us. Thank you for that. Okay.
My family needs to minimize conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yep, my family needs to minimize conflict. Or, again, you can slightly change this without changing the language. So it could be my family can minimize their own conflict
mm-hmm.
or needs to minimize their own conflict. So you'll hear that I'm adding coulds in there, and that's perfectly acceptable. Or you can add sometimes. So often when you have a belief that someone's held on to a long time and really believes it, you can soften it a little bit by using could or sometimes. And in this case, that might resonate. Does that resonate for you, Hope? Sometimes my family can minimize their own conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the turnaround my family needs to minimize conflict with me would also, I think, lead to some fruitful turnarounds as well.
Mm-hmm. My family needs to minimize the conflict with me. Yeah. So that would be an example of a fourth turnaround, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good job. All right. And sometimes I'll do that when a client has a hard time maybe finding examples. That's another time where I will insert sometimes or could. Okay. So let's see. We're with Lisa. Okay, so we're going to move on to Lisa's beliefs. So Hope, I'm not good at finding limiting beliefs in others. How would you turn that to the opposite?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. I am good at finding limiting beliefs in others.
Mm-hmm. Or I could be good at finding limiting beliefs in others. And here's another tip. If I could or might be good at finding limiting beliefs in others if I. So this could be an example of a thought that Lisa has that she really, really believes and is really, really married to. I have no idea. I'm making this up. I don't know if this is true for Lisa or not. But this would be a great way for her to explore, you know what, I might be good at finding limiting beliefs in others if I didn't take it so seriously or if I wasn't worried about so much, right? All right, so great job on that one. So Adrian, to the self, I'm not good at finding limiting beliefs in others. How would you turn to the self?
Okay, sorry, I had you on mute.
That's okay.
I'm not good at finding limiting beliefs in myself.
Beautiful. Perfect. Okay. Is there anyone we missed? I know, Lisa, we missed you on purpose. All right, because I'm going to go back to the top. So Dee Dee, to the other. I'm not good at finding limiting beliefs in others. remember, switch the flip the object and the subject.
Okay, others.
Mm-hmm.
Others don't find limiting beliefs in me.
Or, others are not good. Others are not good.
Others
yeah.
are not good. At, okay, others are not good at finding limiting beliefs in me.
In me. Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. Okay. Aida, let's go to Lisa's second one. A good wife goes with her husband to visit his relatives. What would be the opposite?
A good wife does not go with her husband to visit her relatives.
His relatives, yes, correct.
His relatives.
Yeah. And Katrina, to the self. I like that.
Wow. A good wife. I'm a little stumped on that.
I know. This one's a little tricky, but it's a good one. Take a guess.
A good wife goes to visit her own relatives? I don't know.
Well, remember it's directed at the self. So if you use
right.
her relatives, then that becomes just another other, if you will.
Okay, okay.
So remember, it's all at the self. There is nobody else involved here. And if you don't know, that's okay.
Yeah, it's not. I think I don't know.
Okay. Anyone want to take a guess?
Is it good relatives come visit me?
Well, that's more kind of playing with the opposite, the other.
Oh, the other.
So we're dealing with the self. Anybody want to take a?
So is it a good wife goes to visit herself?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh. A good wife goes to visit herself, or a good wife
visits
herself.
I wish I got that.
Cool.
Yeah.
A good wife visits with herself or goes to visit with herself. Again, sometimes it sounds like a little, sometimes the language can sound a little bit funny, so you can modify with it like I did. Sometimes a good wife visits with herself is what I came up with.
And that's for
Could
other?
That's for self.
Oh, that's for self. Okay.
That's for self. A good wife visits with herself. Now, other. Where were we? How about Rachel? Other.
A good husband goes with his wife to visit her relatives.
Yeah, this one's an interesting one.
Or that's sort of the that's like the opposite and the self, or the opposite and the other, I guess.
This is an interesting one because there's like two others here, so it's a little confusing. There's the husband, and then there's the relative.
I think that it's.
So see if you
the primary thing is the husband, though, right? I mean, the relatives are ancillary to me.
See if you could apply without prejudging it or getting
stuck
in your head. Just see if you can apply. This is what I do. I just apply the rule. Flip the object and the subject and see what you come up with. Okay?
So a good husband goes with his wife to visit her relatives. Isn't that flipping it?
When I flipped it, I used his relatives.
Oh, you lose the relatives. Okay, so good relatives go with, and then did you keep the rest of it? Go with?
So I wrote good relatives, for a good relative can visit me and my husband.
Okay.
Good relatives can visit me and my husband. And again, it's when you kind of throw these out, you want to make sure that, again, is there a projection here? Is there a place where your client can own their own behavior?
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, I don't know Lisa, so I don't know what appears as truer for her. But there potentially could be this thought that they always have to visit their relative. And
right.
So maybe there's some space in here, and I don't know if that's true for Lisa, where, you know, this could be as truer that relatives could visit them.
Jackie, I have a quick question. This is Rachel.
Sure.
You just called on. For the way that Byron Katie does it is that she has, you know, that A is to the self, B is to the other, and C is to the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a progression? Because it seems like obviously some of these don't lend themselves to certain configurations, but is that sort of a natural progression to get to crack open your thinking the best way? Or
so is your question, is there a certain order?
Yeah, is there a certain order? Like, do you want to stick with that order, or do you just go with the meatiest one that, or your client's going to do it anyways?
That's a really, really good question, and I'm glad you asked that. No, there's not a particular order. I like to start with the easiest, which is the opposite.
Okay.
To me, that's where I start.
Okay, because that's her C, so that's good to know that it's good to start with the opposite.
That's how I like to do it.
Okay.
I don't think she has any kind of dogmatic beliefs
about
where you start.
Okay.
It's a matter of really looking into three places.
Okay.
And sometimes you might say to your client, especially guys practicing together, you might say, can you see a turnaround? And your client may come up with a turnaround to the to the self right off the bat, and that's okay.
Okay.
So, no, it doesn't mean like if you start with opposite, then you get deeper with the self and even deeper with the other. So, you know, there's no you know, there's no really judgment on the quality of turnarounds, because it's really about what seems as true or truer for the client and really what resonates the most.
Got it.
And I just went through this exercise. We had an instructor meeting actually on the work last week, and Martha took me through the work, and we came up with two turnarounds. And the first was the opposite, and that seemed as true. But the second one I came up with both was to the self, and that really, like, rang a bell for me. So, you know, it just really depends. It really depends on who your client is. All right. So, yeah, this one's a little tricky. And here's what I want to say about that. I don't want you guys to get, even if you know that there's an other, because there's an other in the limiting belief, but you can't find it, I would prefer you guys to let it go than get too entangled in it. And I'll tell you why. Because it can really impede the flow of a coaching session if you guys get too caught up with, I've got to find that turnaround, right? And I would say if you don't find it right away, I mean, have that mindset of being curious and exploring and throwing out a couple if the client can't find it. But if it doesn't seem to resonate or it doesn't come to you right away or doesn't come to you at all, let it go. It's okay. There's a lot of juice there in just one turnaround or even two turnarounds. So I really want to say that, and that's probably true just for, you know, whenever you're coaching. Don't get too entangled in, you know, trying to follow the rules, so to speak, or these rules in your mind. Because that can, you know, inadvertently hurt, the connection that you have with your client and that meditative state that this is what the work is truly about. So I just want to say that. And sometimes it just doesn't work. Like this one, I don't know. I'd have to ask Lisa. Lisa, does that turn around to the other good relatives can visit me and my husband? Does that seem as true or truer than the original?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay. All right. So it does resonate for her. And sometimes you'll throw it out and you'll go, no, that doesn't resonate for me at all. I mean, they're always visiting me. Right? Or, you know, so you always want to check with your client. All right. So let us move forward. We talked about my house is full of clutter. Let's move on to Dee Dee's. I will never lose this last 10 pounds. So that's a little different than Lizelle's, I will always regain the weight. This reads to me much more like a painful thought. Lisa, opposite, I will never lose these last 10 pounds.
I will lose these last 10 pounds.
Okay.
Or
I will always lose these last 10 pounds. Maybe. You could, technically, that's correct. But remember, this is probably a thought that Dee Dee's had for a while. Tell me where I'm wrong, Dee Dee.
No, you're right.
Okay. So there's probably a lot of doubt in her ability to lose these last 10 pounds, right? So this is where you want to soften it up. How might you soften this up, Lisa?
I could lose
these
last 10
pounds. I could, yeah. And I like to end that sentence with if I.
Okay.
Or I might lose these last 10 pounds if I. It just feels like there's more possibilities there than going from I will never lose these last 10 pounds to I will or I'll always lose these last 10 pounds. It's amazing how those words just kind of open it up to find more examples of where that could be as true or truer. Okay? And you guys stop me if you have any questions. So I don't have enough for my clients. Oh, we, you know what? I didn't, let me just explain. I never lose these last 10 pounds. Do you guys see another turnaround there? There actually is one.
Yeah, I do.
Who's this?
These lost, it's a cell. These lost 10 pounds will never lose their grip on me.
These last 10 pounds will never lose what?
Loosen their grip on me or let go of me.
Yeah, something like that. These last 10 pounds will, well, I actually had these last 10 pounds could lose me, which I think is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you had, say that again, Michelle.
Something along the lines of these lost 10 pounds will never loosen their grip on me.
Yeah. So you're adding that in, this is where you're kind of changing the language, you're adding grip in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that could feel as true or truer to the client, but you want to be really, really cautious not to add your own words in there. But, so I just want to mention that because there's nothing about losing their grip. Even though I think on a very intuitive level, you're probably pretty spot on because there's probably quite a bit of pressure around this and a hold on this. So, So these 10, and, you know, this is where it helps the client to really look inside. How is this 10 pounds, how might this focus on losing this 10 pounds lose, where might she lose herself? Which is sort of like a turnaround to the self. All right, so let's move on. I don't have enough for my client. I don't even know where we were at. Let's say, Katrina, to the self.
I don't have enough for my clients. Was that the statement?
Mm-hmm.
To the self, it would be I don't have enough for myself.
Yeah, I don't have enough for me. Yeah, or I don't have enough for myself. Beautiful. And Rachel, what would the opposite be?
I do have enough for myself.
I do have enough. So the original is I don't have enough for my clients.
I do have enough for my clients.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah.
I couldn't find this. I'm following along on the forum so that I can see the questions, but I got a little distracted looking for this, for Dee's, and I don't see them. Anyway.
Dee Dee put it under a separate thread, which is why you couldn't find it.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, it's totally
sorry.
Good.
So I was
sorry.
Off focus for a moment. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no worries. Okay. Hope, my client, the other.
I'm sorry. I was taking notes. Can you just repeat the sentence to me again?
I don't have enough for my clients. What would the other be?
I don't have enough for my clients.
Mm-hmm.
The other would be,
remember, flip, subject, object.
Yeah, well, my clients don't have enough for me.
Yep.
Is it that simple?
Yep.
My clients don't have enough for me. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a little dubiousness there. What's that about? Does that kind of resonate for you?
I think, you know, when I was doing turnarounds in practice coaching this past week, we had an interesting experience because the turnaround we were doing was that I was feeling that in this initiative I'm involved in with some other parents that I was not as courageous or as brave as one of the other women. And when we started doing the turnarounds, you know, we went down the rabbit hole where we started finding other limiting beliefs and we started you know, it caused me to define what I meant by brave or courageous.
Mm.
And that was so helpful because that got us, you know, really to what I was looking at. And so I guess, you know, my dubiousness was just really understanding what enough meant. But I'm a word person, so I like dissect words down to what, you know, the very, very root of them. And so I guess I feel like I might come up with a better other if I had a better sense of what enough meant, like enough what?
Yeah.
And enough time, enough energy, enough focus. And then I think I could, then it would be easier because that other seemed so simple, but maybe I wasn't really getting at what the heart of or the root of what she was talking about.
Yeah. So two things. Remember, this, you know, during this class, I'm not really dissecting too much, or too much to the degree of the nuance of the thought, because you are so spot on about this, and you have you're so intuitive. You've got such a good marmoset response because I would not take this thought to inquiry. I would do exactly what you did, what you just said, and I hope everybody heard that. Because I think that is really critical to good coaching. When someone says something very general and nebulous, like, I don't have enough, before you take that thought to inquiry, or I wouldn't even take that thought to inquiry, I would ask, what do you not have enough of? Like you are just articulated, hope, time, resources, intelligence, language, whatever articulateness, what is it that you don't have enough of? Inborn talent, ever that thing is. That would be a lot more potent to take a much more specific example of why you don't have enough. And same goes for the thought, I'm not good enough. It kind of falls under that shared universal belief that we all have, I'm not good enough. So this is a version of that. So I'm really glad that you brought that up. So I'm just kind of going through how to turn around thoughts to opposite concepts on a very technical level, okay? But when you're working with quality thoughts, you do want to pay attention to that part of you that says, you know what, I would want to define what this means for this client, what that means for Dee Dee. So beautiful. I'm really glad that you pointed that out because I think it's important to kind of pinpoint what that is or else she could be swimming in that if she doesn't really pinpoint it. Now, having said that, even if, you know, you didn't have that knowledge or you weren't in this class and you weren't privy to this, you could get some juice because when you think about the turnarounds, I do have enough for my clients. You could say, I do, sometimes I have enough for my clients when I am curious or when I take a coaching risk and put out a hat, even though it's not, you know, right. Or I do have enough with my clients because they keep coming back to me. So there could be some movement there. And again, maybe not as pointed or maybe not as powerful. So I'm really glad that you brought that up, Hope. So smart. Okay. So let's just go through one more because I want someone to actually work a thought and all the way through the turnarounds, and I want to leave enough time for that. Let's see. Is there anyone that on here on that list, if you guys are looking at the forum, that you want to work on? There's my partner isn't attracted to me anymore. I'll never find my true calling. Oh, how about this one? I like this one. How about Rachel's? If I leave my marriage, I will regret it. So what would be, Adrian, what would be the opposite?
If I leave this marriage, I won't regret it.
Perfect. Beautiful. Yeah. Lisa, to the self.
If I leave myself, I will regret it.
If I leave myself, I will regret it. Yeah. Beautiful. And anyone want to get the other?
If my marriage leaves me, I will regret it.
If my marriage leaves me, I will regret it. That could be a turnaround.
Can we add the husband in there? Like, if my husband leaves me, I'll regret it?
Well, I don't like a change. I'm concerned that that changes the original thought. If I leave my marriage, I will regret it. If I leave my marriage, I won't regret it. Or if I don't leave my marriage, I will regret it. That could be extreme turnaround. Yeah, I don't really see one here, which doesn't mean there's not one.
How about if I leave my marriage is regretted?
Yeah. Yeah, if I leave my marriage will regret it. That could be a turnaround. I don't know if it's really too necessarily, I would label it to the other. Just remember, you can have more than three turnarounds. So, again, it's all about what really resonates for the client. Right, so you can certainly throw that out there, and I'm all into throwing it out there. Again, not overwhelming with a client, like, let's come up with five or six. But, you know, if that's the one that you come up with, and put it out there. If I leave my marriage will regret it. Could that be as true or truer, Rachel?
The one about if I leave my marriage will regret it?
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Or is that a little too?
I just feel like I don't understand what.
Yeah.
Like my marriage, that seems abstract.
Yeah, a little too abstract, yeah. And yet, so yeah, so sometimes that will happen. Sometimes you'll throw out a turnaround, it'll feel very kind of hard to kind of wrap your head around. And yet, I have to say there have been times where I've thrown stuff out and I'm thinking that as the coach, like, ooh, this feels like a little far out there. And sometimes it's me, this is me, that they will say, oh, no, that really resonates for me. And I'm like, wow, really? So what I want to say in one of the kind of the one of the concepts of when you're working with turnarounds as the coach is be open to surprise. So, you know, notice if you have any judgments around throwing out turnarounds that maybe you think, oh, the client's not going to resonate with this. Be willing to throw it out because you never know. And in this case, it didn't. It just felt a little too...
I mean, I'm thinking about it, and as I think about it, it's like I can see where it can bring a little bit of relief because it makes the regret on something else, like...
Mm-hmm.
It's not on me. It's on, well, of course, the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a bummer, but that's not something I have to carry. It can be carried by the marriage, you know? I mean, I can see where that could work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it helps to diffuse the pain a little bit and take the focus off you.
Yes.
A little bit, yeah. And that's, you know, that's really the whole idea behind turnarounds is to find other truths or other possibilities, windows of interpretation to so that the client feels some relief. Okay, does everyone feel like they've got a better handle on how to turn stressful thoughts around?
Yes.
Good. Okay, the other thing I just want to mention, and then I want to go into a duet, is remember that freedom is experience, and that's kind of what we're looking for. We're helping the client look for freedom from their painful thoughts. Freedom is truly experience when the new concept, the turnaround, seems as true or truer than the original belief. Okay? So here's a question I get all the time. What do you do when you're done, when you're finished with the turnaround? And assuming that the client has given you three examples for each turnaround. So this is what I do. When I'm done with the work and we're done with the turnaround, this is usually how I'll wrap it up. Did you have, I'm talking to a client, did you have any insights or self-discoveries as a result of doing the work on this belief? And I'll repeat the belief. And so we have a dialogue around that. Then what really brings the work to life is when you can ask the client how they can really live the turnaround. We call this the dismount or living the turnaround. So sometimes what I'll do after I have that conversation with the client, I'll say, of the three turnarounds, and let's say there were three, there might only be two, which one really resonated for you the most? Which one had the kind of biggest bang of truth for you? And you can use your own words, of course. And then, you know, they'll share, you know, the one to the self really did. And then you can say, how might you live the next week from this turnaround in this situation with your family? How can you really live the turnaround that you're not responsible for minimizing the conflict in your family? Or how can you reinforce what you learned here today? Another question I ask is, if you experience this turnaround, let's pick one that we did. If you experience this turnaround that you might lose this last 10 pounds as true, how would you be living your life? Or if you live the turnaround that you do have enough for your clients, how would that change the nature of your coaching relationships with those clients? And sometimes I'll give them homework. I'll say, I want you to write down the turnaround that you do have enough and give me every day, write down one reason why you do have enough for your clients. Or write down one reason why your partner is attracted to you. We didn't get to that one, but that was the last one Dee Dee had. All right, questions about that. Those are great ways. All of those questions that I just articulated are great ways to kind of create a dismount from the work and help the client bring these turnarounds to life, so that they really build that neural pathway in the brain in their real life, not just in the context of your coaching relationship. Okay, so who wants to practice the work? Who hasn't? I think all of you have coached. When I was looking at the attendance sheet, it looks like everyone's coached, but only these people have coached once. I think everyone's at least coached once, but these folks haven't coached in a while. So Dee Dee, I don't know if Catherine's here, Lisa and Liddell, you guys haven't coached, I think, since practicum one or early on in practicum one. So, okay. But anyone can volunteer.
This is Dee Dee. I would be willing to coach.
Awesome. And who wants to be Dee Dee's client? It would be great if you volunteer to be a client. If you brought a painful thought, maybe one of these painful thoughts that you brought to class, just so Dee Dee can focus on the four questions and get to the turnaround.
I'll do it. This is Rachel.
Rachel, awesome. Rachel. No. Okay, so Dee Dee, you know what to do, and I'm here if you need me.
Okay. All right, Rachel, which one do you want to work on?
Well, since we just did one of mine, let's not do that one again. How about I will never find my true calling?
Okay. All right. I will never find my true calling. Is that true?
It feels true.
and you will never, I will never find my true calling. Can you know that that is absolutely true?
No.
Okay. And if you didn't have that thought, I will never find my true calling, how would you be? How would you be? How would you feel?
Okay, hold on, Dee Dee. So do you have the questions in front of you?
Uh-oh. No, I don't, and I'm so sorry. Did I?
Yeah, that's okay. So does anyone happen to know what page it is in the binder?
That's probably,
I've
do you have the
it.
Binder
I've
nearby?
Right here.
Okay.
I've got it right
okay.
here. I'm,
all right.
Okay,
so
you
so,
skipped over question three.
Right. So, okay. So how do you react when you believe the thought, I will never find my true calling? What happens?
It makes me feel anxious. And I feel like I'm sort of lesser than the people around me who are seem to be.
Hey, how does lesser than feel, though? What is the feeling?
I guess I'm comparing myself negatively to other people. I'm coming
okay,
up short. I'm comparing and I'm coming up short. That's what I mean by lesser than.
Okay, so that's what happens. You feel less than. It makes you anxious. Does that feel complete?
Well, I think it's sort of distracting because I'm focused on, like, what I'm not seeing. So it's a very glasses half empty sort of perspective. And that tends to taint a lot of things I'm seeing. Then I start seeing a lot of things like glasses half empty with those
okay.
from that perspective.
Okay, so who would you be without that thought, I will never find my true calling?
I would be able to enjoy the things that I am doing now with a lighter spirit. I wouldn't be going around with that negative voice in my head. It would just be freeing to be able to find the joy and find the purpose in what I am doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So would you be willing to turn that thought around?
Yes.
Okay, and if you could turn it around, can you see the opposite of that thought? Can you see the turnaround?
So it would be, I will find my true calling.
Okay.
Or I will always find my true calling.
Mm-hmm. And can you see if you could turn it around? Or can you give me three examples
okay.
of I will find my true calling?
Well, I'm taking this life coaching course, which is definitely feels on the path to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of my true callings is motherhood, and I am doing that. And
Those are the only two I can come up with.
Try to find one more if you can that just feels like I will find my true calling.
Well, I'm definitely putting some energy there. So if I'm focusing on it, then there's the possibility it can come to me.
Okay, so you're opening up to the possibilities.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And then if we were to turn it around to yourself, your true calling will find you.
Yeah, my true calling will find me.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of three examples of your true calling finding you?
Well, I guess going back to the motherhood part, that certainly found me. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I feel like that's true. And I think that the life coaching has been an organic process that has found me. It's kind of
mm-hmm.
been like knocking on my door for a long time. And I mean, I guess I can just imagine that it's true because when I think that thought, I feel like it has a lot more flow to it, like it opens
mm-hmm.
your eyes to possibility instead of me, like, desperately searching, like, groping in the dark, which is what the opposite feels like, you know, when I think I'll never find my true calling, that's the image it conjures. But when I think
mm-hmm.
my true calling will find me, then there's ease there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me jump
right.
in for a second because I think this is such a great kind of a teaching moment.
Okay.
Because I love what Rachel's saying here about ease, and I want to see if you can take what, what Rachel just said and help her form an example. And this would be a good place where you could ask, Dee Dee, you can ask Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could reframe that turnaround and say something like, Rachel, how about I could find my true call, or my true calling could find me if I, and see.
And then have her fill in the blanks?
Have her fill in the blanks because she's sort of saying something around, you know, this ease and this tension, right? The tension she feels when she has to find her new calling or her true calling, but this ease she feels when she tries on this belief that it'll find her. So it's almost like you're inviting her to ask her, what would she need to do? How can she own this? So it's more likely to happen. What could she do so it's more conducive to her true calling finding her? So see if you can.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That makes total sense.
Okay.
Yeah. I just didn't know how to get there. But
yeah.
I,
yeah.
I
oh,
that,
I know.
Like,
that
how
was...
can she be to be open to letting it organically happen in her world?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just rephrase that and say.
Okay.
You know. Okay. My true calling will find me if I, or when I.
Okay. Okay, so Rachel, on the if we turn this around to say my true calling will find me if I, and can you fill in the blank there?
Okay, when I hear that, it sounds like I tense up. Because it makes it sound like it's almost back to
I'll never find my true calling, because then I'm like trying, I'm supposed to be doing something and I don't know what that thing is. But,
okay, so let's go back to ease. Like, you think about, you don't have to do anything.
Okay.
So your true calling is finding you. So it's the actually that turnaround means you are not finding it or doing anything. Your true calling is finding you.
Okay.
And my true calling is find me if I, and think of how you.
Okay, so maybe if I'm just trying to go with that sense of ease, then I'm going to say if I relax.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
If I don't assume it won't, you know.
Or how about saying a positive? I just know it will, or I assume it will.
Yeah, if I have a sense of, if I have a sense of knowing, or if I can have some faith that it will find me, then I can sort of relax into the process and not fight it, like, you know, instead of coming up with reasons why things won't work, I'll be more open and receptive.
Okay. So you would be
so
open.
If I can be open and receptive, I think that would help.
Mm-hmm. So how does that feel in your body when you're relaxed, you're assuming you have this, like, you just know that and have faith that your calling is on its way, and you're in this open and being receptive.
Yeah, I mean, sounds that sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay.
It does.
So, Dee Dee, good job. I want to see, because I'm just looking at time, if you can maybe wrap it up with one of those ideas for discount. Like, and it could be something as simple as asking Rachel if she had any insights or self-discoveries as a result of doing the work on this belief.
Okay. So, Rachel, can you find any insight when you go back to the original thought and now doing the turnarounds on the thoughts? Has anything come
up
for you?
I would say that the thought, I will never find my true calling, is very defensive, and it's limiting, because limiting belief, that makes sense. But it puts you in this sort of, like, it makes me feel painted into a corner, and when I think that my true calling will find me, or that I will find my true calling, it makes me just feel more open, and I can see that is a much more, first of all, just better way to walk through the world, but also more receptive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to feel receptive when you feel defensive. So if I'm open, then I'm more receptive, which seems like definitely a big, that position shift feels like it would potentially be impactful.
Mm-hmm. Great. Awesome.
Okay.
So,
great job. I'm sorry. Did you want to say something else?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. Awesome. Great job. So, Dee Dee, what did you think?
Yeah.
That, the coaching Rachel. What did you do well? What would you do over again if you could hit the rewind button?
Well, I definitely didn't see that I needed her, how to guide her and coach her on the second turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really helpful to be coached on that, because I did feel stuck, and I got nervous about, like, I was trying to, like, be present for Rachel and be there as a coach, but I'm trying to figure the turnarounds in my head at the same time. And so I know that'll come with practice. I'll see it right away, but I didn't see, like, but I didn't, what I felt good about is I felt we were complete. I didn't feel like I needed to come up with another turnaround.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah, good. I'm glad you, yeah, I'm glad you had that felt sense.
Mm-hmm,
yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Because it's really not about quantity, it is about quality. And that one seemed to really hit home for her, and she just kind of took off on that. And you want mm-hmm. to be able to provide the space when someone really, you get the sense that like, there's some juice around that and they want to expand on it. You want to provide them with that space, and you did. That was great.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Okay. Awesome. And Rachel, feedback for Dee Dee.
So I could definitely, I could tell the difference once she opened up her workbook or wherever and found the questions, then it felt like mm-hmm. she had a sense of confidence and a little bit more, like a more sense of calm. I had this feedback given to me by, in my breakout group that I was kind of rushing somebody at the beginning because mm-hmm. I like want to, you know. And I felt a little bit rushed. And I know it's hard because we literally are under the gun for time. But at the beginning, I felt a little bit rushed. And it, and I noticed it maybe particularly because I was doing the same thing before. It's hard. I really have to give be aware of giving people the time. Because what feels like blank, you know, sort of like empty space on the coaching end, you know, the client's like ruminating and churning in their mind and looking and...
Right.
And so to have the confidence to allow some silence, I guess that's what I would invite Dee Dee to try. But then it did, but that was more also at the beginning before she opened up her workbook to the questions.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And it's that's such a good point you make. And it's so funny because in my, I'll be really down with all of you in our instructor meeting, you know, Martha's doing the work and, you know, it's such a conundrum that we're in because the work really is a meditation. She had just come back from the 90 school and the work really is a meditation and you could do the work with someone on one thought for an hour and the work really isn't meant to be done in 12 minutes. So, but, you know, given the nature of these classes, we want you guys to have the experience of kind of doing the work all the way through, but it's certainly not conducive to that, you know, idea or theory that, you know, it's a meditation, right? Because you want to have that practice. So I completely get what you're saying. So it's almost like I want to say, okay, do that here. But when you're practicing, you know, out there in the real world and, you know, with your buddies, you know, please feel free to take that time because it really is an opportunity, especially even those first two questions. You know, the reason why you ask that second question is it just, you know, is it absolutely true, certain it's true, are you absolutely certain it's true, is that it gives that person, your client, an opportunity to really go inside and have it become more of an internal experience where you got just the guide. And I want you guys to remember that because I think that's such an important piece of the work. Is to kind of watch how you guide that person and to leave plenty of space. Because like you said, Rachel, you know, the client might be asking the question, but the coach, but as the client, you're really sitting there and going inside and really like massaging the thought and really thinking, trying to access those feelings and behaviors, and you need that time to do that. So I appreciate you saying that. So, Dee Dee, I want to jump in with my feedback. I think you did a really, really nice job. You know, once you got, you know, handle on the work, I did also feel a shift in your energy a little bit. So that was really nice. One thing I want to say, and this is a teachable moment for all of you. So when I'm doing the work with someone, let's say I was doing the work with Rachel on this thought, I will never find my true calling. This is such a nuance, but it really does make a difference. So instead of saying, is it true, Rachel, that I will never find my true calling, make it more natural.
Because you wouldn't have a conversation with somebody like that. You might say something like, so Rachel, is it true that you will never find your true calling? Is it always true that you will never find your true calling? How do you react, not when you believe the thought, I will never try my true calling, but how do you react when you believe the thought that you will never find your true calling? It feels different, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's kind of how you would talk to somebody. So just something to pay attention to. You don't need to take that, I will find my true calling, but massage it a little bit and just say, who would you be without the thought that you won't find your true calling?
Mm-hmm.
It just feels a little bit more like the client would feel, might have more access. It's just a little bit more direct is what I have to say. And the other thing I want, another, again, a teachable moment is give plenty of time to question three. Well, actually, before I say that, when you first asked Rachel, is that true? She says it feels true. Now, what I like to do when I have a client that says it feels true is just say, just a yes or no, there's no right or wrong. So I want them to commit to a yes or no.
Okay.
Okay?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the same goes for that second question. So true, it feels true. Just say, so just a yes or no, and remind them there's no right or wrong. And then how do you react when you believe the thought that you'll never find your true calling? I love that you asked her, what does it feel like when you feel less than? And notice that she just came up with some actually behaviors versus feelings. So if you ask a question and you want to get to what she's experiencing on a feeling level, don't be too quick to let that go. You can follow that question up with, how does it feel in your body when you believe that you will never find your true calling? Where do you feel that anxiety? Okay, because anxiety is usually a cover emotion, and there's usually something underneath that anxiety. So I think it would be worth it for you to spend your time even with a couple of those sub-questions to get to those sensations that she's experiencing. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah. So who would you be without the thought? That was great. And would you be willing to turn the thought around? The only thing I would have to say about the turnaround, and, you know, I love that you explored these two with her, and I think the second one for sure. And I'm so glad she came up with relax. I was so thrilled that Rachel said, but when I think I have to do something, that causes a lot of tension. So this is where, as her coach, and I'm saying this really to all of you, this is the beauty of spending time in question three, is that sometimes your client will not be able to find that third example, and it is really incumbent upon you to help them if you see something. So when you spend a lot of time in question three, how do you react when you believe that thought, you get a lot of juice there. And oftentimes there's something there that could be that third example, or maybe even that second example. She actually gave you enough to be able to help her out here. Now you kind of worked it out with her where she was, you know, by, you know, saying, relating it to that ease that she felt, and she was able to see that if she relaxed, that might be more conducive to her true calling finding her. But let's say that didn't happen. You could go back in your notes and see, wow, with the thought she felt anxious, with the opposite of anxiety would be relaxing, right?
Okay.
So you could actually use that. And I'll often go back into my notes and I'll go, with a thought, she was anxious. I wonder if that could be the opposite, could be an example for how her true calling could find her if she relaxed. Right? So sometimes what they say in question three can often be fodder for proof right?
Mm,
so
interesting. Yeah.
Here's another example. My true calling will find me if I don't see where I'm always falling short, or could recognize or honor what I'm doing well.
Mm-hmm.
You see, mm-hmm. So that's kind of taken from this idea that she, you know, compares herself negatively and she comes up short. But,
right.
But lack was the big one I was looking for. So I'm super, super thrilled that you got to that, because that really seemed to resonate with her. So
mm-hmm.
My big picture feedback is I'd love to see you kind of, you know, getting on to the coattails of what Rachel said is, you know, see if you can just leave a little bit more space for her to come up with answers. And don't feel like you have to do too much. So even when she said toward the end, you know, I noticed that I have this defensive posture when I believe this thought, and I feel so much more open and receptive when I believe that my true calling will find me. Even the great and yay, I'd love to see you kind of hold back a little bit. Because,
okay.
And I'll tell you why. Because remember, you're her coach and not her cheerleader. And sometimes when we make remarks all the way through a session, or even at the end or different points during the session, it takes that client out of that internal meditative state, and then they're starting to process what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And they're checking for accuracy. So, and I know you didn't do this. You just said kind of great and yeah, and could you find a more kind of something more positive, even something like that. Because our clients put us in these authoritative positions, the message that could get sent is, I need to be more positive, and they're going to want to please you next time. And we want to
okay.
help the client really get to whatever is going on for them without any kind of editing or qualitative kind of judgments. Like, yay, and that's great, and awesome, and can you come up with something more positive? It's a little leading, so I'd love to see you just make it a little easier on yourself and provide a little bit more space for them to just explore. And again, Dee Dee, I think you did a really, really awesome job. I'm really saying this to everybody. So I hope that you hear that, because this is what's so great about these duets, is that it gives me an opportunity to kind of share these teaching moments, because that is really the purpose of the work. It really is a meditation. Even though you're asking questions, you're just there to help them connect.
So, Jackie, and thank you.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much. And I can see where that cheerleading is leading, kind of leading them on, like, oh, good job, you know. So, would I stay like a silent during that time? Not even, no commentary at all.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. I usually don't comment. And if I do comment, it's very benign. I'd say, oh, interesting. Or, maybe I might say more. Or I might not say anything at all. Because they're not really, a lot of this doesn't really require a response. You know, especially when our clients and Rachel was, you know, for sure at this point where she was like, kind of really resonated with this whole idea about relaxing and being open and receptive, and she was starting to make connections. So just ask the question, what discoveries did you have as a result of doing the work? And just let her answer. And if you feel really compelled, you could say, interesting. Or nothing at all. Or you can follow it up with saying, how could you live the turnaround this week that your true calling might find you if you relaxed? So, you know, so instead of saying, great, yeah, you know, follow it up with an equally powerful question so that you make progress, right? So first you ask, mm-hmm. what insights do you have, and then how can you bring this turnaround alive that she can explore that more fully and see how she can bring it into her real life. That's something you could say. Mm-hmm. That's something that you could practice.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going over. I'm so sorry we're going over. I love processing these duets.
But overall, I mean, Dee Dee, really good job. So many great teaching opportunities for you and for actually all of you, because this is, you know, you think, oh, just the four questions and turnarounds, but there's a lot of nuances to this. So if you
mm-hmm.
guys want to get deeper into this and really learn more about the nuances and the depth of the work, I would invite you to attend Free Inquiry Power Hour. I know when people go through their coaching review, I can tell the difference between when people have gone to that class and when they haven't. They know all the nuances of the work, and it's much more integrated. So that would be a nice gift to give to yourselves if you have the time. All right.
Okay.
I apologize for going over. If you need to get off, I totally understand. But if you have any questions, I'm happy to stay on and answer any questions you have. Dee Dee, if you have any other questions, or Rachel, or anybody on the call.
No, thank you so much. I'm glad I
you are. So
I'm
welcome.
Glad I did all the wrong things.
You didn't do all the wrong things, but you know,
no, but
that's
I'm glad
you really
the wrong things that I did. Yeah, no,
yeah.
I did. I really got it because I do tend to, like, if I hadn't done that, then I might have done it in a coaching session. So,
right. Right.
Yeah.
And that's how
so
you
better here, right?
The ball. Absolutely. And that's why I say it's like, get on these calls. Don't sit on the sidelines. Jump into the sandbox. Make all these mistakes and make them early. I hate to call them mistakes. I don't know what else to call them because they really don't. They don't have a negative connotation for me. It's like fail fast and fail early, because that's how you guys are going to really fast track your coaching skills. Is by, you know, going down these cul-de-sacs and then learning from it. Next time you're going to do it so much differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll get to see all this progress you made. But had it not been for this experience, you wouldn't have known. So I'm super, super glad that you had, you know, the courage to kind of jump in there and do this coaching. It was awesome. And you taught us all so much.
Thanks, Jackie. Appreciate it.
You are welcome. You are welcome. Anybody else? Questions? Okay, so next week, make sure you check your binder for any pre-work for our class on the ACT tools. Love ACT tools. So, you know, make sure you check your binder. Keep practicing the work with two or three people this week and post any questions you have on the forum. We'll have some chalk talk about it next week. And thank you all for showing up. I love the engagement. It's makes my job so much more fun when you guys are really engaged and ask such thoughtful questions. All right, you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are welcome.